the RBN Network, republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and I'm talking today with Jim Condit, Jr., and we are discussing this very interesting opportunity that every congressional candidate has, no matter whether you're write-in or you're seriously campaigning with huge quantities of contributed dollars, I would guess, to run ads on radio stations reflecting your messages. And Jim's is very intense. I just heard you absolutely lose all of your casual conversational tone as we reach that last break.
Well, you started to speak of gun control.
Well, that's because the people that we're spotlighting and that we're, again, we're not just, it isn't just some guy in his basement in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's why we spotlighted the book by the Harvard professor Walt and the University of Chicago professor Mearsheimer, their book, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, because they, in a very restrained way, document that the Israeli lobby controls the U.S. Congress and uses our country for their own uses against the interests of our country. So that's a little bit hard for people to dismiss when you've got a book that came out 2 years ago by these university level professors. So, but the reason is that the cabal between the AIPAC and the organized neocon Jewish lobby and the other side of the neocons, the Bush-Clinton coalition, which are working. I mean, anybody that still believes in Democrats and Republicans, you got to wake up. The Democrats and Republicans are two masks for the neocon operation at this point, because they systematically, through money, through sometimes murder, like President Kennedy, and that was one of the big steps forward for them, but usually through money and election fraud, they have gotten rid of all the American adults, almost, that's in power, if you will, and these anti-American neocons have taken over. And we're on the verge of flirting with World War III. Norman Podoritz the other day, Sophia, said to Michael Medved, who's a Jewish talk show host that's on a number of stations, not around here, but he's on in the West and so forth, he said that after the 2004 election, Iran will be attacked under the Bush administration. Said this on the radio. I'm sure that's what the neocons hope for. Podoritz and Irving Kristol were the two Trotskyite communists, also Jewish, who supposedly became the neocon and the new conservatives in the 1970s, which is they're still Trotskyites. As Ron Paul said in a speech on Congress, which is on YouTube, 11-part speech, 2003, he gave the speech at 11, the speech is on YouTube in 11 parts, basically said today's neocons are an updated version of the communist Trotskyites. So we're flirting with World War III. If they
can I just interrupt you? Will you say that again? That after, did you say the 2004 election?
No, I'm sorry. You're talking about what he said?
Yes.
No, he said after this November 4th.
Okay.
That's election day, November 4th.
I thought I heard you say 2004. So after the 2008 election.
Yeah, I might have misspoken. Yeah, but I meant to say that Podoritz, the grandfather, one of the two grandfathers of the neocon movement that had started around the early 70s, right after Nixon was toppled, he said to Michael Medved a few days ago that Iran will be attacked by the Bush administration. He didn't say by the Bush administration. He said Iran will be attacked after the election day, which is November 4th, 2008, and before inauguration day. So in other words,
the Bush administration will still be operative.
The Bush administration would still be in power. Now, whether that comes true or not, we'll have to see, but that's obviously what they're advising, and believe me, they have the ears to advise in the White House. But if they attack Iran, if Israel or the United States attacks Iran, it's not at all sure that Iran's going to lay down and play dead like Iraq did.
Right. Well, we have our break coming up. We'll be back in 3 minutes with Jim Condit, Jr. You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN Network. This is Sophia, your host, and I am speaking with Jim Condit, Jr. about who is running our country and the necessity to really focus in these ads that he's running on the radio as a congressional candidate on the top levels of control. Jim, I heard you say earlier on that they, assuming that you have hit the nail on the head and located and identified the right people, you said they are more afraid of us, and they apparently hate to be exposed. Now, how do you arrive at that if they're powerful enough to harness this entire country like some dumb mule and start World War III?
No, I said they should be more afraid of us than we are of them. I said they should be afraid of us. We should not be afraid of them.
Oh, so you didn't say they are more.
No, they should be. And I think they are looking over their shoulder. They're probably amazed that there's not more of a reaction, because they're not only using our military to flirt with World War III, because they intend to attack not only Iran, but Syria and other Arab countries, eventually, or other Muslim countries. But they also are doing now, I mean, I couldn't have said this a month ago, but they're doing in plain sight one of the greatest thefts, if not the greatest theft of all time. These companies like AIG and Lehman Brothers and these others, they took people's insurance policies. That means some guy in Milwaukee or something's paying $150 a month for his health, his life insurance, and he's done it for 30 years. They took that money and gambled it away. And I believe they looted it. I believe that what is going on here is the ruling elite gave the green light to their agents to loot everybody, all of the common people's savings, all their 401ks, their retirements, their insurance policies, and their mortgages. And when I heard the name Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae in the 80s, that's the first time I heard it, I think, in the mid 80s, I had a bad feeling. I thought, what is this? What is this? They're given these cutesy little names and they're intervening in people's mortgages. And I remember suddenly our mortgage was being sold. Every year it would be with a different company in a different state. They were laundering and looting. And then what they did is they came and they now say, okay, Congress, you got it. The American people that we looted now must bail us out. This is brazen criminality that cannot be hardly described. People cannot grasp it because they're not used to thinking in this level of evil. But the reason, if I can say this, the reason, in my judgment, they had to do this in public is because I wondered, well, why didn't they just bail them out quietly? The Fed can pump money and loan up money into anybody they want through banks, and that's how this little group's been buying up all the media, all the companies, every area of human activity. They're trying to have three companies, like I could use the example of the office supply business as one example. Where Office Max Staples and Office Depot popped up out of nowhere in 1987 and early 88. And by 1998, instead of having 18,000 family and regionally owned office stores in the United States, we had 4,000 family and regionally owned. And these three companies that came out of nowhere with unlimited capital, all run by Jewish businessmen, had come and wiped out that industry. They're trying to do that in every industry. And they're even trying to do it in the banks. But this is so brazen what's happening, because the reason they had to do this in public is when the smoke clears, we're getting from numerous news sources, and they're not hiding it, 71% of the homes in the United States, the mortgage will be held by the federal government / Federal Reserve. Sometimes it's unclear. I think over half the insurance policies will be held by the federal government. And now the federal government is buying banks. This is communism and fascism. Yesterday it came over the news that Bush announced the federal government was going to start having an interest in banks. Bush is a traitor that needs to be put on trial and dealt with, as the Constitution says, to deal with traitors. So this is why they had to do this in public. This is a major step towards communism / Nazism, both of which the same Rothschild bankers were behind, if people know the full history. And this is a major step towards this type of consolidation. Another thing that came over the news, I don't know if it'll ever be on the news again, it was over the radio news, national news, I don't remember if it was Fox or CBS or who the other day. It was over WKRC-AM locally, one of the radio stations will put the ads on. But they said, the radio station, it came over, that the Federal Reserve of New York, that which is a private company, I think everybody listening to this show knows the Federal Reserve is a private company, the Federal Reserve of New York gave AIG another $39 billion or whatever after they got the $85 from the bailout. But they said the Federal Reserve of New York was going to have a 71 or 79% interest now in AIG, meaning this private corporation, the Federal Reserve, is now owning private companies. And that's where things headed. But they had to do this in public to legitimize this fascistic communist takeover of the American economy. At least that's what I think is the punchline of what's happening here.
And the fact that most people believe the government is a good thing and the government is on our side. So it's like math. The whole intention is math. People would think, oh, the banks are bad. They're failing.
Mm-hmm.
These insurance companies are bad. They tricked us. But now the government's taking it over and they'll protect us.
Yes, and it's the same. It's the problem is the government in general has not been, in the federal level, has not been in the hands of Americans that are interested in helping America for most of 100 years, and that's why we're in the situation we're in. But it's in the hands of this countryless Rothschild Rockefeller banking elite and the agents that are one are low enough to work with them and that they can find to work with them. And you'll notice the people who are looting us right and left are getting rewarded with such tremendous rewards that, again, it just paralyzes the average person's mind. There's this guy that testified before Congress who looks like he's straight out of the worst criminal movie of all time, named Fold. I think it's F-U-L-D. I was Lehman Brothers boss Richard Fold, F-U-L-D. And he is testifying, and they're saying, well, you took $484 million out of the company, including like $48 million a few days before it went bust, though. And how can you do this when you knew the company was in tottering? And he said, with a completely straight face, I am having trouble sleeping at night, saying, what could I have done different? Well, excuse me, how about giving back the $500 million you took? I mean, this is so absurd. Excuse me, this is so absurd. I don't know what caused that. This is so absurd that they're letting these crooks who did this to us. Again, I say they did it with the permission of Greenspan and Bernanke, who need to be arrested. These, if not, we are just in for terrible times. But these guys were given the green light and told, loot, loot, loot these average Americans for 20 years. They did it through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, AIG, and who knows, Goldman Sachs. Who knows? I'm sure we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, and they're sacrificing as few companies as possible. And then when the looting's done, they come with this. You got to pass it now. You've got to pass it in 5 minutes, 30 minutes. We got to have the bill passed so we get the $85 billion and no strings attached. And our pathetic Congress, our computer-generated pathetic Congress, after resisting for the sake of their reelections, caved in and gave these banksters unlimited. So this is the whole country is at stake. The whole world is at stake. That's why I just, even though it's uncomfortable and I'm misunderstood by some people, I feel you have to go for the criminals. If it was Arab criminals or German criminals, everyone would be standing up and brainwashed America and go, yay, get them. But if it happens to be part of a small part, as it is, of the Jewish community, even though it's tens of thousands of people who are working in the Zionist network, then it's like, oh, no, we have to let them kill us and our children or pillage our country. We can't say anything because somebody might call us anti-Semitic. You talk about a brainwashed country. For the resources and freedom we have, America is the most brain-dead, brainwashed country as a whole in the history of humanity, and I say that accepting a few hundreds of thousands of people, maybe a few million people who are alert, and in that is quite a few courageous individual Jewish individuals. And let me say one other thing, Sophia, and then I'll stop so we can move on. I worked with the Colliers from 1985 till the death of Jim Collier in 1988. They both died of cancer in their late 50s and the 90s. Ken died in 93, I think. Jim Collier died in 98. They were liberal Jewish individuals. They loved the 60s. They loved sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the 60s. I'm coming from a sheltered, conservative Catholic background in Cincinnati. We worked together for 13 years, never had a moment of friction working on honest elections, getting rid of the computers. They were as hardline as anybody on hand, paper ballots only. And I got Howard Phillips, the founder of the Constitution Party. I coordinated his presidential signature campaign, 5,000 signatures, to get him on the ballot for president in Ohio in 1996 and 2000. And Howard Phillips is of Russian Jewish descent. Now, he converted to some form of Christianity the same branch that Dr. Gary North is in. I think they call it Reconstructionism or something. He converted to that in the 80s, but he's of Jewish background. And one of the men, I won't say his name because my endorsement isn't always good for people, and I would want him to say it if he were on with us. But on New Year's Eve this last year, because the New Hampshire primary was January 3rd, the Iowa caucus was January 8th, which the thugs running the Republican Democratic Party pushed that up so that there was no time for the Ron Paul movement to build until February, which is when the New Hampshire primary and the Iowa caucus usually were in past years. So on New Year's Eve at midnight, I was working with this Jewish fellow that was just a great Ron Paul supporter on trying to do what the Ron Paul campaign was not doing for itself, which is watch the vote. And midnight came, and I said, I call him Bill. I said, Bill, it's midnight. Happy New Year. And he said, Happy New Year. My family had gone out, and his wife was in the other room. But we had to work because the New Hampshire primary was 3 days later. So the idea that I'm against or won't work with Jewish people, which some people jump to the conclusion, is absolutely false.
Well, we are upon another three-minute break, and we'll be back on the other side with Jim Condit, Jr. You're listening to Expansion on the Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org is the URL. My show guest today is Jim Condit, Jr. I'm Sophia, your host. And Jim, I wanted to ask you what you might predict if somebody, your focus is the Zionist Jewish
cabal,
I guess is the word that we could call, or individuals, group that runs basically the world.
Mm-hmm.
But what if people who were doing what you were doing, running these ads, would run an ad about a subject that has its own two sides in the paradigm that we live in officially? For instance, the global warming charade.
Mm-hmm.
That
would be a good idea. In other words, I this is just the way I run the ads, but each person would pick what they feel is the most important thing to break. I call them censorship-busting ads because they're hopefully introducing people to sources of information that will allow them to see through the shallow and or deceptive presentation they're given the mass media. Is that where you were going with it?
Well, yes, but you were talking about how there are all these calls that flood into the station after one of your ads runs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Runs, yes.
Yeah.
And yet the talk show hosts are not allowed to put any of those callers on the air, and there's not to be any discussion of the content of the ads.
Apparently,
so
yeah,
I wonder if they would do the same for an issue that had its own other side in the public arena, like the global warming thing.
Yeah, they may not. There are certain subjects they don't seem to be able to touch, but most of them they will. So yes, people could say, look, I'm going to pick a more strategic. What I'm doing is like coming into a room of hypnotized people and trying to blow a trumpet and unhypnotize them and have them. In other words, a lot of people's reactions can be are like, can you put that on the radio? I had a Arab doctor contact me a few years ago when he heard one of these ads, and he said, I couldn't believe it. He said, he had me over to dinner at his house eventually, and he said, I couldn't believe in America. I was hearing this on the radio. Somebody in Chicago last time when they heard the arrest Chertoff emailed me and said, it was a woman, she said, I almost drove off the road when I heard it. I couldn't believe that something was getting out about 911. So, that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to do something a little more subtle, but still thought-provoking. And then, like in something you just said or many other subjects, they then very well may discuss it.
Right. And if we just had people doing this all over the country and we had all different messages coming out about the other side of the story to all of these issues that are given only this singular focus in the major media, it would be extremely effective. I personally think that.
Sophia, you understand it completely as I see it. I wish that about 100 other of our good leaders, and I know everybody's doing something valuable, but I've told some of these guys that write books, or ladies that write books, you're going to get more sales if you do this. You know, if you go on and put these ads on and put a website, you can put a link to your own book on your own congressional website, as John McCain and Barack Obama do. They're going to increase, but the main purpose here, of course, is not to sell more books, although that would be a happy byproduct for many people. It's to, we're trying to reach the, this is like, it is true that this is an information war, it's an info war, and we're trying to get, let's look at the American people as the children of our country, and those of us who are alert are more or less the uncles and the aunts or the parents of the children who aren't alert yet. The evil forces, the people running the five networks, they want to keep the children of America dumbed down and apathetic until they're slaughtered and enslaved. We are trying to reach them to wake them up and tell them, remind them that they can be strong, that they are strong, and to start to stand up like men and women. And that's what I'm really trying to do. I'm not against, I mean, the Internet is growing slowly, and I'm sure RBN's audience and all the other things that are happening on the Internet are growing slowly. But I'm trying to speed the process up by getting to the average person out there who, for whatever reason, has not felt that they either need look into this, or they felt that they're doing something kind of wrong if they don't stay within the parameters of the major media. We're trying to give them a push to get into the information that all the people listening to this show are into. That's really what I'm ultimately doing with these commercials.
Well, I certainly hope that people listening today will become inspired enough to even just tell someone else, because I think this takes a certain personality type, Jim,
mm-hmm.
someone who's willing to go to this length, to be public about it, to expose themselves, and then to also write the ads, and then they have to be recorded somewhere, right?
I could explain this on a conference call. I could tell, I am not good technologically, believe me. I am struggling, and when I go in to do these things, it's kind of like I want to put it off. But I have all the equipment in my house. You're going to spend, for instance, the program I use to do the video, if people go to watch the video at wagthedog2008.com, that whole video is put together with a $250 Canon camera like you would get at the store for your family. And you want to get one that has a firewire input, they call it. That's how you get the video from your camera to your hard drive in your computer, and a microphone input. And then you get a little lavalier mic, which is about $69. That gives a great sound. You pin it to your lapel when you're talking. And then you import that into a program called Sony Vegas Movie Maker. Now, there's others, but I use Sony Vegas, the people that taught me. And that's a $99 program that it would have taken $350,000 to do the same thing in 1970.
We are going into our break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
You're listening to republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is the show Expansion, and I'm Sophia, your host, and we have a last half hour with Jim Carlson, who I believe just got disconnected. Is Jim on the line now? I don't think so. I will continue until Jim gets on the line. Jim has been running ads as a congressional candidate, very creative ads, about... In particular, his subject is the cabal, the Jewish Zionist cabal that's running our country. But I suggested to Jim that others could put on ads about controversial issues that had their place in the forum that's available to us now. And I was also thinking about groups maybe getting together to create this possibility, not just one person having to do it alone. Jim was explaining to us the cost involved and the technicality of recording your own ads. And I don't know if he's on the air. Are you on the air now, Jim?
Yes, we're back. Sorry, I disconnected myself accidentally.
Good. All right.
See, that's Jim, how technologically able I am.
Yes. Jim, I was mentioning now that as the break was going for its usual 3 minutes, it occurred to me that people could create a group effort out of this. They could appoint one person as the front person to, quote-unquote, run for Congress, and then a whole other, you know, level of people could be putting the ad together, contributing money to buy the equipment or someone. I mean, in all of these activist groups, there are people who have recording capability. I find that there are a lot of very varied skills.
Yeah.
So it would be, you know, three or four or six or eight people who would band together and say, let's get a particular message out, for instance, chemtrails or anything. It doesn't have to be what you're doing.
No.
My question is, how often is this opportunity available? Is it seasonal? Does it just depend on elections? Can you run these ads all year? Because you can campaign all year, I suppose.
Yes, if there was the money, theoretically you could run them throughout the 2 years. Now, I don't know if, you know, 6 months after November, you might annoy people if you're running political ads that they perceive as political ads. But, yeah, certainly a year and a half out from each election, technically you can do it any time. Now, that brings up, if I can mention it, I've never been able to have the time to explain this, and it'll only take 2 or 3 minutes, of the controversy, why I need to sue the FCC. When we see one, the federal, the reasonable access law says that they must, any FCC licensed stations must accept the ad of any congressional candidate, of any federal candidate, which would be Congress, Senate, President, or federal judicial. And it doesn't have any qualifications. But when I put this Arrest Chertoff ad on, even though the Chicago Tribune called the FCC and ran a story that we have that said that this is the reason, you know, they have to put this on because of the law regarding advertising of candidates, this ad must have been causing such discomfort. I imagine Michael Chertoff himself was told about the ad, because the ad said, arrest Chertoff. Michael Chertoff is an enemy of America, descended from Russian Jews and now a citizen of Israel. He is running out. He now has, quote, become an American, unquote. And then I said that he and his cabal engineered 9/11 to put us into, to trick Americans into going to war against Iraq, and that they now were persecuting Christopher Bolin. That's why I put him on in Chicago, because Bolin of the American Free Press had been tasered for no reason and is now in hiding somewhere in the world outside of America because of that whole thing. They found him guilty, and he fled the country. But I was trying to help prevent his being convicted by making it known to the people of Chicago. Well, 2 days in, they got together with the FCC, which backed up Chicago, and Disney World somehow was involved, because the refund check for the unrun ads I got was from Disney. But my ads were only to run Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Monday. On Friday, they quit running the ads on Friday morning, and they told me, the FCC called me, a guy named Bobby Baker, who was running the media division, with a lawyer present, who told me, because of this obscure decision, you can only run ads in your primary contour region. First of all, they said you can only run ads where the radio station hits your city. And I said, well, WLS does hit our city at night. The Chicago station does hit the Cincinnati at night. Then they said, well, it's got to be in your primary contour region, which means where the basic area, where the population depends on that station as their local station. When I told this to the Chicago station manager, Jack Kelly, who was a nice guy, he said, I've been in the radio business for 30 years. I've never heard of primary contour region. In other words, they were making stuff up. And the lawyer who was with Baker, I said, could I have your name in case we need to follow up? He said, no, I don't want to give you my name. Now, can you imagine this? A government employee working for the FCC would not, just like in a communist country, would not identify himself. And I'll tell you one reason why he probably wouldn't is because, even though this man has fallen into quite a bit of controversy, Daryl Smith called from Europe when he heard they were messing with our ads and said, look, you guys can be sued personally if you violate the rights of the supporters of Jim Conda Jr. They've donated money to a campaign. You're violating their rights if you take his ads off the air. Because I was arguing with them the second day. They took it off the third and the fourth day. So we need to sue them about that. But you see, you could technically do this around the country with one candidate. And even Baker said to me, while we were going back and forth, he said, well, technically, your reading of the law is correct if you want to be real technical. Well, yes, I do want to be real technical, you know, because that's what the law says. And they just violated. They didn't. They wanted to protect Chertoff and get these things off the air, and they did. But technically, with the way the law reads, you could run ads all over the country through only one candidate, although that would not be ideal because, you know, a congressional candidate, though, can solicit money from anywhere in the United States, or a senatorial candidate, and they should be able to solicit, as the law says, supporters from any place in the United States they want. And in a movement like mine where only a relatively few people in each area understand what you're doing, you benefit greatly by advertising not only in your own city but in other cities. So that's a little background on a lawsuit we need to do, but we just don't, you know, we just have not had the money, so we haven't been able to do it. But technically what you're saying is you could appoint 5 or 6 regional candidates, and that could be your candidates, and then have the production team and the other people's talents come in, make it a group effort, and through those 5 candidates, you could still put ads on the 60 or 70 or 80 major media markets in the United States and hit basically, potentially, you know, 250 million to the 3 million people or whatever.
Yeah, it's just a great possibility. It takes a little bit of diversity in terms of personality and courage to do it. But again, if you do it as a group, I think it's very, very doable.
Yes, and then if you combine that with organizing people through the precinct plan and the committees of safety, which is to, and if I could, that's also in my video, but if I could mention it briefly, there's 50 states, there's 3,141 counties or so, sometimes they may break out a new one, and there's about 300,000 precincts, and it usually, a precinct is 5, 10 streets around your house, and it's where you and all the other people in your neighborhood or precinct vote. That's your precinct. And every 2 years, next time will be June 2010, each county, your county and my county, has a Republican precinct organization meeting and a Democrat precinct organizational meeting. And at that meeting, the elected precinct execs, who just usually get like 5 signatures, and then they're on the ballot at the primary. They're the last thing. Usually nobody notices it. Usually it's unopposed. 1/3 of them don't even have anybody run. But whoever gets elected at that primary, and they're often little 50 to 30 or 19 to 11 votes, it's the only election where you could stand there or have you and your family split up the hours on election day and shake hands and greet every voter. Or you don't have to do any of that. But so whoever gets the most elected precinct people, they go to the Republicans, go to the Republican, and the Democrats go to Democrat. And those precinct people elect the party leaders. And those party leaders are really that's where the power in this country come from. The party leaders I hate the Democrat and Republican leadership and what they're doing. But we have to deal in those parties for now because they control every county. Each county controls how the vote is counted. So if you could take over the dominant party in your county, or in some cases you need to take over both parties, those party leaders ultimately pick the people who decide who are endorsed. 99% of the time, one of the two endorsed people by the parties gets elected. Those people in the election field will pick how your votes are counted, whether they're going to be counted by computer, by one of the 4 big Rockefeller Rothschild companies in secret, or whether the ballots are going to be counted in the open by the citizens from your neighborhood, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, in the open, where nobody can centrally rig it. Those party leaders pick the candidates, and 99% either the endorsed Republican or endorsed Democratic candidate wins. Those party leaders pick the state and national party leaders, and those national party leaders set all the rules for the presidential primaries and the presidential convention. That's why Ron Paul supporters at the Republican convention had goons stationed by the neocons that run the Republican Party who were taking Ron Paul buttons and Ron Paul signs away from people, even the elected, the delegates to the convention, as they entered the convention floor, because these thugs, these communist Nazi-type thugs, didn't want one Ron Paul sign to show up in the Republican convention. They did the same thing to Buchanan, not as successfully in 1996. And the blackmail and the threats that go on behind the scenes to try to get people to change their vote. I was in New Hampshire, and a pregnant mother who started out the most courageous, by the end of it, the governor, this thug Steve Merrill, who was the governor of New Hampshire, and his thugs had her in tears because they said, if you vote for Buchanan, we're going to send family services. She was in a custody battle with her husband to take your children away from you. And she tearfully on the floor, they put her on national TV, she tearfully on the floor said, well, I was I was for Buchanan, but now that Dole's won, I guess it's better we go unanimous. Well, thank God some people held out and it wasn't unanimous. I want to jail these thugs. These thugs in the Republican and Democratic Party are worse than a poor black guy or white guy that goes and robs a store. I'm against robbing a 7-Eleven with a gun or without a gun, and those guys should be punished, and if they use a gun, they should go to jail. But they're not 1/1,000th as dangerous to this country as people like George W. Bush and Michael Chertoff and you name any one of these crooked senators, McCain, any one of them, treasonous. They are so much more dangerous than any petty thief in the United States to the world. So anyway, that's the
end of that. Jim, it strikes me that you should be running. You should be out there making speeches like this to crowds of people,
yeah,
and going door to door and explaining it all.
If you can find a crowd to talk to, that's the problem. In other words, unless you have your own money to advertise and set up your own meeting halls, they ruthlessly exclude people like me from the debates. And if Ron Paul wasn't a congressman, needless to say, he would have been excluded from the Republican debates, you know. But so that's the end of that tirade, Sophie.
Well, now I wanted to ask if you're – I know that you've been doing a lot of work in the voting arena to expose the fraudulent voting
systems, the fraudulent system
that we have.
Yeah.
So what is that website?
That is votefraud.org.
Okay, votefraud.org. Now, Jim, was it all of that immersion that clued you into this advertising opportunity? Was it born out of that?
Well, it was actually born out of in the 70s. I could see how things were going and that the Republican and Democrats were the same party. So we started, as I said earlier in the program, a third party, or it's actually a fourth party, in Cincinnati, called the Cincinnatus Party, and we ran in three cycles. But all of the groups that we thought we were helping came in to destroy us. They all told people, no, don't go with these guys. They're going to hurt the major party candidates. So we ended up only running in three cycles. But it was from that. But in that, in 1980, let me think for a second here, 1985. I ran two more cycles, 85 and 87, because we had filed a suit against the Board of Elections in Hamilton County, and it took 4 years, but we won that suit. Judge Richard Niehaus said there is no safeguard against the computers being programmed to distort the election results. There's no safeguards against the computers being programmed to distort the election results. But then the appeals court 2 years later overturned it, saying that a county judge had no authority over the county computers, if you can believe that. But in the meantime there, we brought forth we had put out a press release on the eve before the 86 election, and we said, even though the appeals court still was sitting on the case, so we said, even though a judge ruled that our computer systems are open to fraud, they're still going to use the same computers. A man who had worked for Cincinnati Bell named Leonard Gates thought that I was being sent forth by somebody in the establishment, and he called and asked to meet me in a park, and we said, no, let's meet at Frisch's, which is like a restaurant. I didn't like the idea of meeting in a dark park. He was a whistleblower, and long story short, while they covered up the vote fraud issue, he eventually got on 60 Minutes from our efforts. 200 articles were run here locally. Policemen resigned. But he testified, and people resigned right and left wherever he pointed his finger, that he was, as a Cincinnati Bell line worker, he was tapped to hook up the voting computers in Cincinnati to the main company in California, which is now it is the election system and software. Then it was called Business Records Corporation. They sell these companies every few years so they can kind of erase as far as possible the paper trail and the people trail. But he was the whistleblower, the only one that ever came forth that testified, and this would be a two-hour show in itself, but he could not get any publicity. And the Cincinnati Inquirer and Channel 5 and Channel 9 here would keep telling him, no, we're going to do it. Then when it would come close, they would say, oh, no, something came up. We can't cover it. So after about a year, he finally agreed. I told him the whole time. He said, you know, I'm getting worried. Cincinnati Bell knows what I'm doing. Everyone knows what I'm doing except the public. So I told him for a year, we'll put you on one of the political commercials. And I had researched how can we get this to the public and found this law. And we did put him on in 1985. And from there, all the stories happened. One little community paper helped us. And he eventually got on 60 Minutes. And But that he was first brought to the public through this reasonable access law when I was a city council candidate. And that's another thing I could mention. If you're not a federal candidate, okay, like you're a city council candidate or a county commissioner candidate, if they allow anybody in your race to advertise, they have to allow you to advertise. So if they say, as some stations have, we're not taking any political advertisements from city council, they can do that. But if they let anybody running for city council advertise, they have to let everybody advertise, and that's why they had to carry my ads in 1985 to help this whistleblower come forth to the public.
Well, that is quite another informative tirade.
And that is in Chapter 12 of Vote Scam, the Collier's book, Vote Scam, the Stealing of America. Part of that is in Chapter 12 of their book. Other parts of it are on our website on votefraud.org.
Well, Jim, we're coming up on our break again, and then we'll have our last closing segment.
Okay.
With you.
Good.
Thanks.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and I'm concluding a very interesting, lively 2 hours with Jim Condit Jr., the stuntman of running for Congress. Jim, I wanted to ask you, if you are conducting these nightly conference calls to help people understand the process that you're in right now, and that this is available to any one of us, how do people join that call?
Okay, good question. And let me just have a second here to bring up the number. Sorry, I don't have it memorized like I should. But there's the PIN number, and that makes it a little more difficult. And that number would be, and it's on the website at the top link, or the one of the links near the top, it says conference call schedule. But it's 641-715-3200. That's 641-715-3200. And then the PIN number is 106-4662-POUND. That's 106-4662-POUND. Everybody just pays for their own call, or if they're on a cell phone at night, it may be free. 9 p.m. Eastern, midnight also Eastern time, or 9 p.m. Pacific. That midnight call is also 9 p.m. Pacific. And people can find that number, though, and PIN at the top, one of the top links of at wagthedog2008.com, which says conference call schedule.
Great. Well, thank you for telling us that. I really think that this could be very effective if people started it in groups especially.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Did you ever tell us how much it costs? What's the outlay financially to do
different.
This?
Yeah, it's different in different cities, but we have in the past. I set a goal this time for $27,500, where we really could make an impact, because I know what $15,000 does, but it looks like I'm going to be scraping to get to $15,000 this time. We've usually raised and spent $15,000 the last few cycles, and that buys 2 solid weeks in the Midwest sphere in 38 states at night on the overnight in Cincinnati. It buys 2 pretty solid weeks of pretty saturation round the clock advertising on every show on those 2 stations. WLW is a lot more expensive than WKRC, but WKRC is our local station where Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage are. So that's about it. Now, if you're in LA, it's going to be more expensive. If you're in Iowa, Des Moines, it's probably going to be less expensive. We put
right.
on about $15,000 worth of ads to try to get a fair count for Ron Paul in Iowa and New Hampshire as well, and it was less expensive in both states than Ohio, but in New York City or Houston and so forth, you're probably going to be still looking at a little higher budget than that.
Right, and then there's also the little bit of cost. I suppose if you're trying to raise thousands to run the ads to pay for them, then it's negligible what you have to spend out of pocket to set yourself up.
On
right?
the internet, That's... yeah, on the internet. I mean, your camera and your programs that I use are going to cost you maybe $1,000 or $1,500. They can be used for other things, of course. But yeah, it's you know, on the internet. Of course, you don't have stamps and things like that. But usually, it's good to back it up. I'm going to send out mail to my my 300 or 400 people that have supported me at some time in the past today. But should have done that 10 days ago. But when the video went up. But at any rate, yeah, groups would be better because when you're doing it pretty much on your own, it's you can forget to do things. You know, you just don't everything doesn't work like pistons all the time.
Right.
But I would say something, one other thing about the psychology of this. I had an Appalachian woman who was at one time head of the Appalachian community in near downtown Cincinnati, Barb Desbro. She passed away in 1990.
Jim, we're coming up on the closure of the show, so quickly.
She used to say, if you're going to take them on, don't let them mug you in a dark alley. Make them hit you on the double yellow line in the middle of rush hour traffic. And that's why I do things the way I do. So that if they're going to go after me, a lot of people are going to know about it because they know about me through these ads. You know?
Jim, thank you so much for being here and telling me and others all about this. And I hope that people will contribute to your campaign and start doing this themselves.
Well, thank you. It's
so wagthedog2008.com is
Jim's
website.
Sophia, thank you for putting film to the one of the best.